Many of us think of play as the opposite of learning, and that it's only for children up to a certain age, after which it's time to get serious. But what if we're wrong? What if those assumptions couldn't be further from the truth? Today on The Learning Curve, we aim to find out.
Welcome to The Learning Curve, a Nordanger education podcast where we tackle the realities of schools, learning, parenting, technology, well-being, and everything that comes next. At the heart of our conversations are the things families wrestle with every day, the challenges, the trade-offs, and the big questions that can quietly sit in the back of your mind. So if you're a parent who's looking for a bit more clarity and who wants to feel a little less alone, perhaps, you're in the right place.
Go and play. It's something we say to young children all the time. But at what point do we stop believing that play has value? Many of us think of it as the opposite of serious learning, something children grow out of as they get older. But what if play isn't a break from learning at all? What if it's one of the most powerful ways children can learn? So joining me today to unpack all of that is Kate Kelly, Assistant Head and PYP Coordinator at Swiss International Scientific School in Dubai, and someone who is passionate about the role play has in helping children learn, grow and thrive. Kate, a very warm welcome.
Thank you, Fu. I'm so happy to be here today to share on something I am really, really passionate about, which is play.
Excellent, excellent. So look, before we kind of dive into play, why don't you just give us a quick run through of what you do at Swiss International School, your career so far, just a quick kind of, so we get a sense of your experience.
Sure. So I am currently at Swiss International, as you mentioned. I am the PYP coordinator, but I've also recently been promoted to this position. I have been spending most of my time playing down with the lower primary students. So I've been the head of early years and grade one, where we see most of the play. I have been in Dubai for about 12 years now. I've come in and I've taught different curriculums. I've done American curriculum, British, and then the IB curriculum as well. So I have observed and taught play through all these different means. I have worked my way through language support with our students who don't have any English, as well as our students with additional needs. And I have now found myself at the center of it all, the center of inquiry, the center of play, as the PYP coordinator at the Swiss School.
Okay, perfect. And you are a parent yourself, is that right?
I am. I have two beautiful girls. They are 4 and 6 years old. Sometimes feels like 16, but yeah, they're 4 and 6.
Okay, now I know that feeling very well. My two daughters are 11 and 8, soon turning 9, and I tell you what, my 11-year-old is definitely is kind of going on 16 at the moment, and it's an interesting time, let's put it that way. So look, let's dive then into play. And I think when people hear the word play, I suspect that many immediately think of, you know, toddlers building towers with building blocks, or, you know, kids running around a playground, that kind of thing. And they don't necessarily associate it with so-called serious learning. So I wonder, when educators talk about play, what do they actually mean?
So as educators, we are constantly using this term called play-based learning. And I think we've kind of captioned the phrase as play-based learning for the parents, really. Because like you're saying, when we say they're playing, the parents are like, I'm paying for them to play. They can play at home. I'm sending my child to school to learn. So we have kind of coined the phrase as play-based learning more for the parents than for the students. When teachers send the students out into what we call provision to playtime in their classrooms, they are doing so much learning. That red block that our two students are fighting over, they are busy doing problem solving right there. And sure, we can teach them how to share. We can talk about sharing. We can read stories. But there's no real life learning like, you know, helping two students figure it out to share. We might be watching a student making their sign for their restaurant using their phonics skills. So initially, you may not see the learning going on there, but it is happening. The resilience is being built because the two boys in the construction area have had to rebuild their tower 6 times because it keeps tipping over. These are all things that we need as adults, but they need to be taught, and that it's a lot easier to be taught through play than it is through a story or through explaining to students to be resilient.
I think it makes sense, doesn't it? I suppose the magic of play is the fact that it doesn't feel like you're learning. It feels like you're just having fun. But obviously, there's all sorts of stuff going on in the background.
Exactly. My favorite thing is asking my child, what did you do today? And she says, nothing. Then I know she played all day. And actually, there was loads of learning going on. And this is something that I tell the parents all the time. If your child comes home and tells you they learned nothing, I promise you, they did a lot. But exactly, we don't want the students to feel as if they are working, as if they are learning, even though they are. The students are really, really young in schools, especially in Dubai. Just recently, our students are coming in even younger. For the next year, the age cutoff has changed. And this has a lot of parents worried. And I think we've been able to put their minds at ease by explaining to them that the students are playing. They don't know they're learning. We aren't putting the additional pressure on the students to meet different objectives, because it's all done through play. And if you walked into a classroom, you may not initially be able to see that learning that's happening. You might have to dig a little bit deeper. You don't have the standard teacher sitting in front of the class who is directing the learning, or who is dictating to the students what they're doing. You've got your students all around the class playing, so it may not look like learning exactly.
And I suppose play-based learning isn't just something confined to the IB, is it? This is across all sorts of curricula, some of the ones that you mentioned that you're experienced in, the American and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. I have taught a few curriculums. I'm actually from South Africa, so this would even be, from back home the same way. We've got staff in all our different schools from different countries, and this is best practice. It is best practice because we're letting our kids be kids. We're letting them show their creativity. We're letting them problem solve. We're also letting them build friendships. The easiest way for our students to build friendships is to play together, to play alongside each other. So yeah, it's across different curriculums, environments, countries. Definitely, it is kind of that universal language, isn't it?
Absolutely. I almost feel that it'd be lovely if work, adults' work, was kind of worked in a similar way, in the sense that you're doing your work, but it feels like you're just playing, It'd be nice if that were the case. I'm curious because you obviously you're very much focused. The way you've been describing it very much seems to be aimed at very young children. And you mentioned that the cutoff date has also been lowered. So now even younger children coming into that school environment and playing. Does play become less important as children grow older, do you think? Does it kind of not have that much relevance anymore in their education, or does it maybe just change?
I don't think it becomes irrelevant. I do think that it just starts changing around the words that we use for it, perhaps. For example, a grade 5 student might still be playing, but she's doing a dance recital with her friends. It just looks different. She may not be building a tower using her magnet tiles, but she is still collaborating with her peers. She's still using her creativity to come up with a dance that she's going to be showing her family later on, or her friends. And I think as adults, I can use my husband as an example. He loves to play golf, so it becomes a hobby. We call it our hobbies, or we call it competitive sports that we're involved in. So we're still playing as adults. I think we're still playing as teenagers even. It just looks different. But I think what's really important around that is our mindset that we have, because there's that constant need to be busy, right? So even if we feel like we're being unproductive, we're like, oh, we need to be doing something. So we might engage in a hobby. We might engage in an extra activity in order to keep ourselves busy. But we should be really mindful of still keeping that open to play, whether it be a hobby, whether it be developing ourselves creatively by going to a pottery class. That could still be deemed play.
Yeah, no, that is understood. That makes sense. I think definitely. I mean, all my hobbies and things certainly feel like play. And clearly, when you're a teen, you're also encouraged to do all those activities and things. And maybe that then becomes your version of play. You mentioned obviously earlier that you know, problem solving happens through play. Friendships are built. And I imagine a whole bunch of other skills and important life skills and also academic skills that are developed through that play-based learning. So are there any kind of skills that maybe children are learning through play that would be maybe even harder to teach kind of directly as a kind of academic study?
Look, I definitely think the negotiation skills, the problem-solving skills, and the resilience are the hardest to teach because you can't really put it down to an academic objective that you're trying to teach while writing or while counting, doing math. It is something that happens during play. It's also something that happens incidentally, which, you know, is another point I'd love to touch on, of having that flexibility during play, having unstructured play, because I think that play has kind of changed over the years and become a little bit more structured. We now understand the importance of play as teachers, as educators, as parents, yet we're kind of still putting it in a box and making it structured. So I think having unstructured play as well allows us to teach that resilience, the negotiation, the collaboration skills. Students are able to be creative and find out not just what they can do, but who they are. They're able to do that in the earlier years, and then as they develop and go through school, through primary, through high school, that builds as well. But I also think just adaptability can be taught through play. You can always teach a child what sharing means, but when they are negotiating over, you know, the blocks or the cars or having the conversation, the RSC skills that's being built during play, you can't put a price tag on that. And that is a lot harder to teach in a structured setting. In Dubai, I'm sure you're aware, we have so many students that are coming. It's a very transient city. We have so many students that come through with no English, for example. I'm in a bilingual school, so it may be that they don't have the French or the German as well. And there is nothing more rewarding for the students, and there's also nothing more motivating than a friend that they can play with. And when they're able to communicate alongside that friend while they're playing with them, that is the easiest way to learn the language. We always tell the parents, the teachers aren't as motivating as their friend is. If you have a play date, you know, invite a friend over, that'll get him speaking English faster than we can get him speaking English.
Absolutely. It's the practical value of it rather than the theoretical. I don't know. I'm probably not explaining myself very well there. But I want to pull a little bit on something that you said just a short while ago around that maybe the play has changed over time, and obviously, you know, you've been teaching for a number of years, and I wonder if you've noticed maybe children's relationship with play changing. And, you know, for example, have screens maybe changed the way children play? Has that had an impact in some way? Also kind of the I suppose nowadays parents are under pressure, or create the pressure for themselves perhaps, to kind of structure children's day, you know, so they're going from one activity to the next. Have you noticed any kind of change on that front?
Definitely. Like I mentioned, children today have a lot more structured schedules, and it's a lot more adult-led activities as well than previous generations. For example, when I was in school, even when my nephews and my nieces have gone through schooling versus what my own children are going through now, and what we see. Look, we have a lot to offer our kids now. There's a lot of activities fighting for our kids' attention. As parents, you want the best for your child as well. I feel like you have that sense of mom guilt or dad guilt. You know, if I don't sign my child up for to learn a musical instrument, or if I don't sign my child up for that swim squad or whatever it looks like, they might be missing out. which leaves the student or the child with little time to be creative and have that open-ended play. Obviously, like you mentioned, the technology, that's really, really affected and changed the landscape of play significantly. Our students' attention span is a lot shorter because of it. They are more engrossed with the flashes per second that comes off a game for perhaps that they're playing or a show that they're watching. I've done a deep dive into just kind of the effects on the brain of the different shows that students or children watch, and how it affects their creativity, but also how it affects their attention span. I guess what concerns me is not really that children are playing differently now versus, you know, years ago. I think play is always evolved alongside society. So as society evolves, play is going to evolve, and so is everything else, isn't it? I think what concerns me is that children often have fewer opportunities for uninterrupted child-led play where adults aren't setting the agenda, where they're just, you know, being creative, taking that box and turning it into a restaurant or lining all their characters up and creating a specific role play. Children still have this incredible instinct to play. And if you leave them long enough, they will stop playing. They will create something. We just need to give them the time and give them the space and the permission, right? Like, that's what this is about, the permission to play. And they almost always know what to do with it.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you've it kind of leads very nicely into an area that I'm particularly interested in, which is that connection between play and boredom, to use a word that maybe some people kind of are a little bit afraid of and nervous about. And maybe that's because, you know, we've become a little bit too uncomfortable with children simply having, you know, nothing to do for a while, and actually saying, I'm bored. So what's your take on boredom? Is it something that, you know, that parents should quickly try to fix, try to kind of solve, or maybe is there something more to it?
I think you summed that up really accurately. It is something that parents feel like they need to fix. I mean, I'm guilty of it. Previously, your child says, I'm bored. You're like, oh, why don't you do this? You give them a range of options of things that they can do. And it is just, I think it's natural for us as parents to want to just solve your child's problems without realizing the impact that it has on their creativity or their time or how they manage themselves. But I think it does come down to that we live in a culture that values productivity, right? We need to optimize all of our time, our children's time. It's down to that we're the adult-led schedules. And sometimes we feel pressure to just ensure that every single moment of our child's childhood is meaningful, it's educational, or it's enriching, because that's on us, right? We have that responsibility of raising our children. So you kind of want to set them up for success. So I think it is down to a lack of understanding, a lack of understanding what the benefits of being bored are, you know. Boredom's always been one of our greatest invitations, of a child's greatest invitation, of mine. I have memories of being bored and the random things that I'd come up with. But it just creates that space, right? It creates the space for our children to use their imagination for problem solving or just to be creative. But when we as parents or educators, adults, nannies, caregivers, whoever, when we rush to fill every single gap that our child has, then we remove the conditions that allow our child to invent random games like Bluey, you know, it stops us from allowing them to build worlds or to discover things that genuinely interest them or allow them to show what they are really good at.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we're on the cusp of going into the long summer break, and I know for sure that in my household, it won't be long before, you know, my kids come running up to me saying, I'm bored, I don't know what to do. And so I think, you know, clearly there is some merit and there's some value in just letting them sit with that boredom just for a little while. Obviously not forever, clearly, but for a little while, and seeing what they can come up with. And that I think that freedom to do that is important, certainly. Also, you mentioned permission to play, which is something that I absolutely wanted to talk to you about, because this is kind of Nord Anglia's permission to play campaign. It was a piece of research as well that they did, and I know that you were involved in that. And what struck me was that although it kind of centered on children, it was actually asking a much bigger question about adults. And the research suggests, you know, that many of us have become so focused on productivity, self-improvement, some of the things that you mentioned just now, that we've almost forgotten how to play ourselves, how to just simply enjoy, you know, something for the sake of for the fun of it, essentially. Were you surprised by that? What's your take on that research?
I want to say, I think I was surprised by it, in terms of, I think when you read the research, it kind of hits you as an adult, as a parent, because this is from our children as well, right? It's what they think, but it's also our perception as adults on play and what we think is play. It's down to that rebranding of what is play. But it's also made me a little sad, because we should be enjoying our children's childhood alongside them. But instead, we're trying to optimize every moment that we have, whether that be at work, whether it be at home. You know, we're doing work at home as well, even if it is like the dishes, or if we're cooking dinner, or we're organizing the grocery list, that's still kind of optimizing our time. So yeah, it did surprise me, but I think it also made me self-aware to kind of stop and take a moment.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, I think a statistic that really kind of stood out for me, at least, was that 82% of parents said it's harder to switch off today than it was when they were kids. And I mean, I personally can absolutely relate to that. I'd agree with that. Does that resonate with you? Is that something that you've seen with, you know, in your work with interacting with families and things?
Absolutely. I do struggle to switch off, and I have to be so intentional about it when I do manage to switch off, because there is that guilt that comes back of, oh, I'm wasting this time. I could be doing X, Y, and Z. And I think that is just what we do as adults. So I agree. And even if that means while I'm playing with my child, again, it's down to, oh, I'm doing nothing right now. I could be doing X, Y, Z. So definitely, I agree. I'm probably part of that 82%.
There we go. I mean, it's a large majority, isn't it? So let's kind of, I guess if parents are listening and they're thinking, you know, maybe we have become a little bit too busy, you know, ourselves. I want to kind of offer some practical advice. Let's be practical about it. What do you think? What are one or two simple things that families can do to create more space or more opportunity for play? And I suppose I'm not just for children, but also for themselves too, alongside their children.
Absolutely. So my first thing, which is an easy fix, I do it in my house, and it's kind of could be adult fun as well. It's not just, because I think parents have that mindset of like, I don't want to sit and build blocks, or I don't want to my husband dress up like a princess, do you know? So this could be something that could be beneficial for the whole family, and that would be like games nights or games day, or like any sort of board game, Uno, that kind of thing. I have a 4-year-old who started playing Uno around 3. So this is something that can be taught even from a young age. And if you feel guilty that they're playing, they're actually learning numbers and turn-taking and problem solving and resilience, because they will lose and you will have to coach them through that. So that's an easy fix. Everyone can get a few board games or card games, and it's always fun for them. The other one that I think is an easy fix is kind of letting them help cook dinner. So you're still optimizing that time, but they're helping you, they're joining you, they're spending time with you. And for them, they are having fun. They are still playing and you're getting your jobs done. Another easy practical fix is building a den. Building a den, you can still read a story in your den. If you want, you can do the screen time in the den. You know, have a little movie night if it is your TV night or whatever it looks like for your family. But just using the spaces around your home and thinking about it as I'm creating memories with my child here. Your child will grow up and remember, oh, we used to do board game nights. Our family did board game nights on a Saturday. Or I always cooked with mom or dad in the kitchen. My husband's a chef, so he actually naturally does that really, really well. I stay out of the kitchen. But it's a really easy one to be able to do. And I think the biggest thing is if your child gets bored, let them be bored. Let them stay bored and be like, if you think of a game, I'll play the game with you. You think of a game, I'll join you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I know I have lots of experience of my younger daughter playing games with her, and she really does not like to lose. And things go, you know, she goes flying off the wall. But clearly, that's an important part of you know, regulation and all sorts of stuff. So you can point to lots of things that they can. The valuable lessons that are learned through that whole experience, but equally, it brings us all together. It's fun. We're all playing together. So I think that's it's a good shout. I think what I'd like to do as we kind of begin to wrap up then is I'm going to make some kind of general statements about play, call them positions maybe that are probably held by a lot of people, and I'm interested in hearing your response. And ideally, in as few words as possible. So, kind of quick fire, myth busting going on. We're having a bit of fun here. We're playing.
Sure.
So, play is just for younger children.
Absolutely false.
Play is wasted learning time.
Definitely not. It's where all the learning happens.
Okay. And play is something adults should organise.
Yes and no. Organise some play dates.
Okay. And play is less valuable than structured activities.
False. Absolutely false. When we allow for the unstructured play to happen, that's when the learning and the creativity really shines.
And last one, play is difficult to fit into modern family life.
Definitely not. It's the easiest thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've proved that because you've mentioned about games night, etc. Okay, great. Look, so before we finish, one last question for you. If there's one message, if you like, that you would want parents to remember about play at school, at home, doesn't matter where, what would that message be?
That play is where all the learning happens. It may not look like it on the surface, but it is where all the learning is happening for life skills.
Okay, great. So, Kate, thank you very much for your time. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Same.
I hope we've given given people lots of food for thought in terms of how to maybe integrate play into their family life, into their home, even at work, perhaps. Let's see.
Yeah.
But clearly, play is something that is very valuable. Play-based learning, unstructured play, all those key phrases. So thank you for your time, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Learning Curve. For more thoughtful conversations about education, parenting, and growing up in today's world, hit subscribe to follow the podcast wherever you listen.